In Asriel, I had never been able to thaw. In the centuries I'd known him, he'd said little about his life, those years in his father's keep, locked in darkness. Perhaps the Shadow Singer gift had come to him then. Perhaps he'd taught himself the language of shadow and wind and stone. His half-brothers hadn't been forthcoming either. I knew because I'd met them, asked them, and had shattered their legs when they'd spat on Asriel instead. They'd walked again, eventually. The Ator said,
"Do you think it is not common knowledge that you took her from Tamlin?"
I knew that already. That had been Asriel's task these days, monitor the situation with the Spring Court, and prepare for our own attack on Highburn. But Tamlin had shut down his borders, sealed them so tight that even flying overhead at night was impossible, and any ears and eyes Asriel had once possessed in the court had gone deaf and blind.
"The king could help you keep her, consider sparing you, if you worked with him."
As the Ator spoke, I rummaged through its mind, each thought more vile and hideous than the next. It didn't even know I'd slipped inside, but there, images of the army that had been built, the twin to the one I'd fought against 5 centuries ago, of Highburn's shores full of ships, readying for an assault, of the king lounging on his throne in his crumbling castle. No sign of Jurian sulking about, or the cauldron. Not a whisper of the book being on their minds. Everything the Ator had confessed was true, and it had no more value. Az looked over his shoulder. The Ator had given him everything. Now it was just babbling to buy time. I pushed off the wall. "Break its legs, shred its wings, and dump it off the coast of Highburn. See if it survives." The Ator began thrashing, begging. I paused by the door and said to it, "I remember every moment of it. Be grateful I'm letting you live. For now." I hadn't let myself see the memories from under the mountain. Of me, of the others, of what it had done to that human girl I'd given Amarantha in Feyre's place. I didn't let myself see what it had been like to beat Feyre, to torment and torture her. I might have splattered him on the walls, and I needed him to send a message more than I needed my own vengeance. The Ator was already screaming beneath Truth Teller's honed edge when I left the cell. Then it was done. I staggered back, spooling myself into my body. Tamlin had closed his borders. What situation with the Spring Court?
None, as of right now. But you know how far Tamlin can be driven to protect what he thinks is his.
The image of paint sliding down the ruined study wall flashed in my mind.
I should have sent more that day, Rhys said with quiet menace.
I snapped up my mental shields. I didn't want to talk about it.
Thank you for telling me, I said, and took my book and tea up to my room.
Feyre, he said. I didn't stop. I am sorry about deceiving you earlier.
And this, letting me into his mind, a peace offering. I need to write a letter. The letter was quick, simple, but each word was a battle, not because of my former illiteracy. No, I could now read and write just fine. It was because of the message that Rhys, standing in the foyer, now read. I left of my own free will. I am cared for and safe. I am grateful for all that you did for me, all that you gave. Please don't come looking for me. I'm not coming back. He swiftly folded it in two and it vanished.
Are you sure?
Perhaps it would help with whatever situation was going on at the Spring Court. I glanced to the windows beyond him. The mist wreathing the city had wandered off, revealing a bright, cloudless sky. And somehow, my head felt clearer than it had in days, months. A city lay out there that I had barely observed or cared about. I wanted it, life, people. I wanted to see it, feel its rush through my blood. No boundaries, no limits to what I might encounter or do.
I am no one's pet, I said.
Rhys's face was contemplative, and I wondered if he remembered that he'd told me the same thing once, when I was too lost in my own guilt and despair to understand. What next?
For what it's worth, I did actually want to give you a day to rest.
Don't coddle me.
I'm not, and I'd hardly call our encounter this morning rest. But you will forgive me if I make assessments based on your current physical condition.
I'll be the person who decides that. What about the Book of Breathings?
Once Asriel returns from dealing with the Ador, he's to put his other skill set to use and infiltrate the Mortal Queen's courts to learn where they're keeping it and what their plans might be. And as for the half in Prithian, we'll go to the Summer Court within a few days if my request to visit is approved. High Lords visiting other courts makes everyone jumpy. We'll deal with the book then.
He shut his mouth, no doubt waiting for me to trudge upstairs, to brood and sleep. Enough. I'd had enough of sleeping, I said. You told me that the city was better seen at night. Are you all talk, or will you ever bother to show me? A low laugh as he looked me over. I didn't recoil from his gaze. When his eyes found mine again, his mouth twisted in a smile so few saw. Real amusement, perhaps a bit of happiness edged with relief. The male behind the High Lord's mask.
Dinner, he said, tonight. Let's find out if you, Feyre darling, are all talk, or if you'll allow a Lord of Night to take you out on the town.
Amryn came to my room before dinner. Apparently, we were all going out tonight. Downstairs, Cassian and Moore were sniping at each other about whether Cassian could fly faster short distance than Moore could winnow to the same spot. I assumed Asriel was nearby, seeking sanctuary in the shadows. Hopefully he'd gotten some rest after dealing with the Ador, and would rest a bit more before heading into the mortal realm to spy on those queens. Amryn, at least, knocked this time before entering. Nuala and Caradwyn, who had finished setting combs of mother-of-pearl into my hair, took one look at the delicate female and vanished into puffs of smoke.
Skittish things, Amryn said, her red lips cutting a cruel line. Wraiths always are.
Wraiths? I twisted in the seat before the vanity. I thought they were high fae.
Half, Amryn said, surveying my turquoise, cobalt, and white clothes. Wraiths are nothing but shadow and mist, able to walk through walls, stone, you name it. I don't even want to know how those two were conceived. High Fae will stick their cocks anywhere.
I choked on what could have been a laugh or a cough. They make good spies.
Why do you think they're now whispering in Asriel's ear that I'm in here?
I thought they answered to Rhys.
They answer to both, but they were trained by Asriel first.
Are they spying on me?
No.
She frowned at a loose thread in her rain cloud-colored shirt. Her chin-length dark hair swayed as she lifted her head.
Rhys has told them time and again not to, but I don't think Asriel will ever trust me fully. So they're reporting on my movements, and with good reason.
Why?
Why not? I'd be disappointed if Rhysand's spymaster didn't keep tabs on me, even go against orders to do so.
Rhys doesn't punish him for disobeying?
Those silver eyes glowed. The Court of Dreams is founded on three things: to defend, to honor, and to cherish. Were you expecting brute strength and obedience? Many of Rhysand's top officials have little to no power. He values loyalty, cunning, compassion. And Asriel, despite his disobedience, is acting to defend his court, his people. So, no, Rhysand does not punish that. There are rules, but they are flexible.
What about the tithe?
What tithe?
I stood from the little bench. The tithe? Taxes? Whatever? Twice a year?
There are taxes on city dwellers, but there is no tithe. She clicked her tongue. But the High Lord of Spring enacts one.
I didn't want to think about it entirely, not yet, not with that letter now on its way to him, if not already delivered. So I reached for the small box on the vanity and pulled out her amulet. Here, I handed over the gold and jewel-encrusted thing. Thank you. Amryn's brows rose as I dropped it into her waiting palm.
You gave it back.
I didn't realize it was a test. She set it back into the case.
Keep it. There's no magic to it.
I blinked.
You lied?
She shrugged, heading for the door.
I found it at the bottom of my jewelry box. You needed something to believe you could get out of the prison again.
But Rhys kept looking at it
because he gave it to me 200 years ago. He was probably surprised to see it again and wondered why I'd given it to you.
Likely worried why I might have given it to you. I clenched my teeth, but Amryn was already breezing through the door with a cheerful,
"You're welcome."
Chapter 29. Despite the chill night, every shop was open as we walked through the city. Musicians played in the little squares, and the Palace of Thread and Jewels was packed with shoppers and performers, high fae and lesser fairies alike. But we continued past, down to the river itself, the water so smooth that the stars and lights blended on its dark surface like a living ribbon of eternity. The five of them were unhurried as we strolled across one of the wide marble bridges spanning the Sidra, often moving forward or dropping back to chat with one another. From the ornate lanterns that lined either side of the bridge, fae light cast golden shadows on the wings of the three males, gilding the talons at the apex of each. The conversation ranged from the people they knew, matches and teams for sports I'd never heard of. Apparently, Amryn was a vicious, obsessive supporter of one. New shops, music they'd heard, clubs they favored. Not a mention of Highburn or the threats we faced. No doubt from secrecy, but I had a feeling it was also because tonight, this time together, they did not want that terrible, hideous presence intruding, as if they were all just ordinary citizens, even Rhys, as if they weren't the most powerful people in this court, maybe in all of Prithian, and no one, absolutely no one on the street, balked or paled or ran. Awed, perhaps a little intimidated, but no fear. It was so unusual that I kept silent, merely observing them, their world, the normalcy that they each fought so hard to preserve, that I had once raged against, resented. But there was no place like this in the world, not so serene, so loved by its people and its rulers. The other side of the city was even more crowded, with patrons and finery out to attend the many theaters we passed. I'd never seen a theater before. Never seen a play or a concert or a symphony. In our ramshackle village, we'd gotten mummers and minstrels at best, herds of beggars yowling on makeshift instruments at worst. We strolled along the riverside walkway, past shops and cafes, music spilling from them, and I thought, even as I hung back from the others, my gloved hands stuffed into the pockets of my heavy blue overcoat, that the sounds of it all might have been the most beautiful thing I'd ever heard. The people, and the river, and the music, the clank of silverware on plates, the scrape of chairs being pulled out and pushed in, the shouts of vendors selling their wares as they ambled past. How much had I missed in these months of despair and numbness? But no longer. The lifeblood of Velaris thrummed through me, and in rare moments of quiet, I could have sworn I heard the clash of the sea clawing at the distant cliffs. Eventually, we entered a small restaurant beside the river, built into the lower level of a two-story building, the whole space bedecked in greens and golds and barely big enough to fit all of us, and three sets of Illyrian wings. But the owner knew them and kissed them each on the cheek, even Rhysand. Well, except for Amryn, whom the owner bowed to before she hustled back into her kitchen and bade us sit at the large table that was half in, half out of the open storefront. The starry night was crisp, the wind rustling the potted palms placed with loving care along the riverside walkway railing, no doubt spelled to keep from dying in the winter, just as the warmth of the restaurant kept the chill from disturbing us or any of those dining in the open air at the river's edge. Then, the food platters began pouring out, along with the wine and the conversation, and we dined under the stars beside the river. I'd never had such food, warm and rich and savory and spicy, like it filled not only my stomach, but that lingering hole in my chest, too. The owner, a slim, dark-skinned female with lovely brown eyes, was standing behind my chair, chatting with Reese about the latest shipment of spices that had come to the palaces. The traders were saying the prices might rise, High Lord, especially if rumors about Highburn Awakening are correct. Down the table, I felt the others' attention slide to us, even as they kept talking. Reese leaned back in his seat, swirling his goblet of wine.
We'll find a way to keep the prices from skyrocketing.
Don't trouble yourself, of course, the owner said, wringing her fingers a bit. It's just so lovely to have such spices available again, now that things are better.
Reese gave her a gentle smile, the one that made him seem younger.
I wouldn't be troubling myself, not when I like your cooking so much.
The owner beamed, flushing, and looked to where I'd half-twisted in my seat to watch her.
Is it to your liking?
The happiness on her face, the satisfaction that only a day of hard work doing something you love could bring, hit me like a stone. I remembered feeling that way, after painting from morning until night. Once, that was all I had wanted for myself. I looked to the dishes, then back at her, and said, I've lived in the mortal realm and lived in other courts, but I've never had food like this, food that makes me feel awake. It sounded about as stupid as it felt coming out, but I couldn't think of another way to say it. But the owner nodded like she understood and squeezed my shoulder.
Then I'll bring you a special dessert, she said, and strode into her kitchen.
I turned back to my plate, but found Risan's eyes on me. His face was softer, more contemplative than I'd ever seen it, his mouth slightly open. I lifted my brows.
What?
He gave me a cocky grin and leaned in to hear the story Moor was telling about. I forgot what she was talking about as the owner emerged with a metal goblet full of dark liquid and placed it before Amryn. Reese's second hadn't touched her plate, but pushed the food around like she might actually be trying to be polite. When she saw the goblet laid before her, she flicked her brows up.
You didn't have to do that.
The owner shrugged her slim shoulders.
It's fresh and hot, and we needed the beast for tomorrow's roast anyway.
I had a horrible feeling I knew what was inside. Amryn swirled the goblet, the dark liquid lapping at the sides like wine, then sipped from it.
You spiced it nicely.
Blood gleamed on her teeth. The owner bowed.
No one leaves my place hungry, she said, before walking away.
Indeed, I almost asked Moor to roll me out of the restaurant by the time we were done, and Reese had paid the tab, despite the owner's protests. My muscles were barking thanks to my earlier training in the mortal forest, and at some point during the meal, every part of me I'd used while tackling Reese into the snow had started to ache. Moor rubbed her stomach in lazy circles as we paused beside the river.
I want to go dancing. I won't be able to fall asleep when I'm this full.
Rita's is right up the street.
Dancing?
My body groaned in protest, and I glanced about for an ally to shoot down this ridiculous idea. But Azriel said, his eyes wholly on Moor.
I'm in.
Of course you are,
Cassian grumbled, frowning at him.
Don't you have to be off at dawn?
Moore's frown now mirrored Cassian's, as if she realized where and what he'd be doing tomorrow. She said to Azriel,
We don't have to.
I want to,
Azriel said, holding her gaze long enough that Moor dropped it, twisted toward Cassian, and said,
Will you deign to join us, or do you have plans to ogle your muscles in the mirror?
Cassian snorted, looping his elbow through hers and leading her up the street.
I'll go. For the drinks, you ass. No dancing.
Thank the mother. You nearly shattered my foot the last time you tried.
It was an effort not to stare at Azriel as he watched them head up the steep street, arm in arm and bickering with every step. The shadows gathered around his shoulders like they were indeed whispering to him, shielding him, perhaps. His broad chest expanded with a deep breath that sent them skittering, and then he set into an easy, graceful stroll after them. If Azriel was going with them, then any excuse I might make not to. I turned pleading eyes to Amryn, but she'd vanished.
She's getting more blood in the back to take home with her, Rhys said in my ear, and I nearly jumped out of my skin. His chuckle was warm against my neck. And then she'll be going right to her apartment to gorge herself. I tried not to shudder as I faced him. Why blood? It doesn't seem polite to ask. I frowned up at him. Are you going dancing? He peered over my shoulder at his friends, who had almost scaled the steep street, some people pausing to greet them. I'd rather walk home, Rhys said at last. It's been a long day. Moor turned back at the top of the hill, her purple clothes floating around her in the winter wind, and raised a dark gold brow. Rhys shook his head, and she waved, followed by short waves from Asriel and Cassian, who dropped back to talk with his brother in arms. Rhys gestured forward. Shall we? Or are you too cold? Consuming blood with Amryn in the back of the restaurant sounded more appealing, but I shook my head and fell into step beside him as we walked along the river toward the bridge. I drank in the city as greedily as Amryn had gobbled down the spiced blood, and I almost stumbled as I spied the glimmer of color across the water. The rainbow of Valaris glowed like a fistful of jewels, as if the paint they used on their houses came alive in the moonlight. This is my favorite view of the city, Rhys said, stopping at the metal railing along the river walkway and gazing toward the artist's quarter. It was my sister's favorite, too. My father used to have to drag her kicking and screaming out of Valaris. She loved it so much. I fumbled for the right response to the quiet sorrow in those words, but like a useless fool, I merely asked, Then why are both your houses on the other side of the river? I leaned against the railing, watching the reflections of the rainbow wobble on the river surface, like bright fishes struggling in the current. Because I wanted a quiet street, so I could visit this clamor whenever I wished, and then have a home to retreat to.
You could have just reordered the city.
Why the hell would I change one thing about this place?
Isn't that what high lords do? My breath clouded in front of me in the brisk night. Whatever they please?
He studied my face. There are a great many things that I wish to do and don't get to.
I hadn't realized how close we were standing. So, when you buy jewelry for Amryn, is it to keep yourself in her good graces or because you're together?
Rhys barked a laugh. When I was young and stupid, I once invited her to my bed. She laughed herself hoarse. The jewelry is just because I enjoy buying it for a friend who works hard for me and has my back when I need it. Staying in her good graces is an added bonus.
None of it surprised me. And you didn't marry anyone?
So many questions tonight. I stared at him until he sighed. I've had lovers, but I never felt tempted to invite one of them to share a life with me, and I honestly think that if I'd asked, they all would have said no.
I would have thought they'd be fighting each other to win your hand, like Ianthe.
Marrying me means a life with a target on your back, and if there were offspring, then a life of knowing they'd be hunted from the moment they were conceived. Everyone knows what happened to my family, and my people know that beyond our borders, we are hated.
I still didn't know the full story, but I asked, Why? Why are you hated? Why keep the truth of this place secret? It's a shame no one knows about it. What good you do here?
There was a time when the Night Court was a court of nightmares and was ruled from the Hewn City, long ago. But an ancient High Lord had a different vision, and rather than allowing the world to see his territory vulnerable at a time of change, he sealed the borders and staged a coup, eliminating the worst of the courtiers and predators, building Valaris for the dreamers, establishing trade and peace.
His eyes blazed, as if he could peer all the way back in time to see it. With those remarkable gifts of his, it wouldn't surprise me.
To preserve it, Rhys continued. He kept it a secret, and so did his offspring, and their offspring. There are many spells on the city itself, laid by him and his heirs, that make those who trade here unable to spill our secrets, and grant them adept skills at lying in order to keep the origin of their goods, their ships, hidden from the rest of the world. Rumor has it, that ancient High Lord cast his very life's blood upon the stones and river to keep that spell eternal. But along the way, despite his best intentions, darkness grew again. Not as bad as it had once been, but bad enough that there is a permanent divide within my court. We allow the world to see the other half, to fear them, so that they might never guess this place thrives here. And we allow the Court of Nightmares to continue, blind to Valaris's existence, because we know that without them, there are some courts and kingdoms that might strike us, and invade our borders to discover the many, many secrets we've kept from the other High Lords, and courts these millennia.
So truly none of the others know? In the other courts?
Not a soul. You will not find it on a single map, or mentioned in any book beyond those written here. Perhaps it is our loss to be so contained and isolated. But,
he gestured to the city around us, my people do not seem to be suffering much for it. Indeed, they did not, thanks to Rhys and his inner circle. Are you worried about Az going to the mortal lands tomorrow? He tapped a finger against the rail.
Of course I am. But Azriel has infiltrated places far more harrowing than a few mortal courts. He'd find my worrying insulting.
Does he mind what he does? Not the spying, I mean. What he did to the Ador today.
Rhys loosed a breath. It's hard to tell with him, and he'd never tell me. I've witnessed Cassian rip apart opponents and then puke his guts up once the carnage stopped, sometimes even mourn them. But Azriel... Cassian tries, I try, but I think the only person who ever gets him to admit to any sort of feeling is Mor, and that's only when she's pestered him to the point where even his infinite patience has run out.
I smiled a bit, but he and Mor, they never...
That's between them and Cassian. I'm not stupid or arrogant enough to get in the middle of it.
Which I certainly would be if I shoved my nose in their business. We walked in silence across the packed bridge to the other side of the river. My muscles quivered at the steep hills between us and the townhouse. I was about to beg Rhys to fly me home when I caught the strands of music pouring from a group of performers outside a restaurant. My hands slackened at my sides, a reduced version of the symphony I'd heard in a chill dungeon when I had been so lost to terror and despair that I had hallucinated as this music poured into my cell and kept me from shattering. And once more, the beauty of it hit me, the layering and swaying, the joy and peace. They had never played a piece like it under the mountain, never this sort of music, and I'd never heard music in my cell save for that one time.
You, I breathed, not taking my eyes from the musicians playing so skillfully that even the diners had set down their forks in the cafes nearby. You sent that music into my cell. Why?
Rhysand's voice was hoarse.
Because you were breaking, and I couldn't find another way to save you.
The music swelled and built. I'd seen a palace in the sky when I'd hallucinated, a place between sunset and dawn, a house of moonstone pillars. I saw the Night Court. He glanced sidelong at me.
I didn't send those images to you.
I didn't care. Thank you for everything, for what you did, then and now.
Even after the Weaver, after this morning with my trap for the Ador.
My nostrils flared. You ruin everything. Rhys grinned, and I didn't notice if people were staring as he slid an arm under my legs and shot us both into the sky. I could learn to love it, I realized. The flying. I was reading in bed, listening to the merry chatter of the toasty birch fire across the room, when I turned the page of my book and a piece of paper fell out. I took one look at the cream stationery and the handwriting and sat up straight. On it, Rhysand had written,
I might be a shameless flirt, but at least I don't have a horrible temper. You should come tend to my wounds from our squabble in the snow. I'm bruised all over, thanks to you.
Something clicked against the nightstand, and a pen rolled across the polished mahogany. Hissing, I snatched it up and scribbled, Go lick your wounds and leave me be.
The paper vanished. It was gone for a while, far longer than it should have taken to write the few words that appeared on the paper when it returned. "I'd much rather you licked my wounds for me." My heart pounded, faster and faster, and a strange sort of rush went through my veins as I read the sentence again and again. A challenge. I clamped my lips shut to keep from smiling as I wrote, "Lick you where, exactly?" The paper vanished before I'd even completed the final mark. His reply was a long time coming. Then, "Wherever you want to lick me, Feyre. I'd like to start with everywhere, but I can choose if necessary." I wrote back, "Let's hope my licking is better than yours. I remember how horrible you were at it under the mountain." Lie. He'd licked away my tears when I'd been a moment away from shattering. He'd done it to keep me distracted, keep me angry, because anger was better than feeling nothing, because anger and hatred were the long-lasting fuel in the endless dark of my despair, the same way that music had kept me from breaking. Lucien had come to patch me up a few times, but no one risked quite so much in keeping me not only alive, but as mentally intact as I could be considering the circumstances. Just as he'd been doing these past few weeks, taunting and teasing me to keep the hollowness at bay, just as he was doing now. "I was under duress," his next note read. "If you want, I'd be more than happy to prove you wrong. I've been told I'm very, very good at licking." I clenched my knees together and wrote back, "Good night." A heartbeat later, his note said, "Try not to moan too loudly when you dream about me. I need my beauty rest." I got up, chucked the letter in the burbling fire, and gave it a vulgar gesture. I could have sworn laughter rumbled down the hall. I didn't dream about Rhys. I dreamed about the Ador, its claws on me, gripping me as I was punched. I dreamed about its hissing laughter and foul stench. But I slept through the night and did not wake once.
Chapter 30. Cassian might have been cocky grins and vulgarity most of the time, but in the sparring ring in a rock-carved courtyard atop the House of Wind the next afternoon, he was a stone-cold killer. And when those lethal instincts were turned on me... Beneath the fighting leathers, even with the brisk temperature, my skin was slick with sweat. Each breath ravaged my throat, and my arms trembled so badly that any time I so much as tried to use my fingers, my pinky would start shaking uncontrollably. I was watching it wobble of its own accord when Cassian closed the gap between us, gripped my hand, and said, "This is because you're hitting on the wrong knuckles. Top two, pointer and middle finger. That's where the punches should connect. Hitting here," he said, tapping a calloused finger on the already bruised bit of skin in the V between my pinky and ring finger, "will do more damage to you than to your opponent. You're lucky the Ador didn't want to get into a fist fight." We've been going at it for an hour now, walking through the basic steps of hand-to-hand combat, and it turned out that I might have been good at hunting, at archery, but using my left side, pathetic. I was as uncoordinated as a newborn fawn attempting to walk. Punching and stepping with the left side of my body at once had been nearly impossible, and I'd stumbled into Cassian more often than I'd hit him. The right punches, those were easy. "Get a drink," he said. "Then we're working on your core. No point in learning to punch if you can't even hold your stance." I frowned toward the sound of clashing blades in the open sparring ring across from us. Azriel, surprisingly, had returned from the mortal realm by lunch. Moore had intercepted him first, but I'd gotten a second-hand report from Rhys that he'd found some sort of barrier around the Queen's palace and had needed to return to assess what might be done about it. Assess and brood, it seemed, since Azriel had barely managed a polite hello to me before launching into sparring with Rhysand, his face grim and tight. They'd been at it now for an hour straight, their slender blades like flashes of quicksilver as they moved around and around. I wondered if it was as much for practice as it was for Rhys to help his spymaster work off his frustration. At some point since I'd last looked, despite the sunny winter day, They'd both removed their leather jackets and shirts. Their tanned, muscled arms were both covered in the same manner of tattoos that adorned my own hand and forearm, the ink flowing across their shoulders and over their sculpted pectoral muscles. Between their wings, a line of them ran down the column of their spine, right beneath where they typically strapped their blades.
"We get the tattoos when we're initiated as Illyrian warriors, for luck and glory on the battlefield," Cassian said, following my stare.
I doubted Cassian was drinking in the rest of the image, though. The stomach muscles gleaming with sweat in the bright sun, the bunching of their powerful thighs, the rippling strength in their backs, surrounding those mighty, beautiful wings. Death on Swift Wings. The title came out of nowhere, and for a moment, I saw the painting I'd create. The darkness of those wings, faintly illuminated with lines of red and gold by the radiant winter sun, the glare off their blades, the harshness of the tattoos against the beauty of their faces. I blinked, and the image was gone, like a cloud of hot breath on a cold night. Cassian jerked his chin toward his brothers.
"Rhys is out of shape and won't admit it, but Azrael's too polite to beat him into the dirt."
Rhys looked anything but out of shape. Cauldron boil me. What the hell did they eat to look like that? My knees wobbled a bit as I strode to the stool where Cassian had brought a pitcher of water and two glasses. I poured one for myself, my pinky trembling uncontrollably again. My tattoo, I realized, had been made with Illyrian markings. Perhaps Rhys's own way of wishing me luck and glory while facing Amarantha. Luck and glory. I wouldn't mind a little of either of those things these days. Cassian filled a glass for himself and clinked it against mine, so at odds from the brutal taskmaster who, moments ago, had me walking through punches, hitting his sparring pads, and trying not to crumple on the ground to beg for death. So at odds from the male who had gone head-to-head with my sister, unable to resist matching himself against Nesta's spirit of steel and flame.
"So," Cassian said, gulping down the water.
Behind us, Rhys and Azrael clashed, separated, and clashed again.
"When are you going to talk about how you wrote a letter to Tamlin, telling him you've left for good?"
The question hit me so viciously that I sniped, "How about when you talk about how you tease and taunt Moore to hide whatever it is you feel for her?" Because I had no doubt that he was well aware of the role he played in their little tangled web. The beat of crunching steps and clashing blades behind us stumbled, then resumed. Cassian let out a startled, rough laugh.
"Old news."
"I have a feeling that's probably what she says about you."
"Get back in the ring,"
Cassian said, setting down his empty glass.
"No core exercises, just fists. You want a mouth off? Then back it up."
But the question he'd asked swarmed in my skull. "You've left for good. You've left for good. You've left for good." I had. I'd meant it. But without knowing what he thought, if he'd even care that much. No, I knew he'd care. He'd probably trashed the manor in his rage. If my mere mention of him suffocating me had caused him to destroy his study, then this. I had been frightened by those fits of pure rage, cowed by them. And it had been love. I had loved him so deeply, so greatly, but... "Rhys told you," I said. Cassian had the wisdom to look a bit nervous at the expression on my face.
"He informed Azrael, who is monitoring things and needs to know. As told me."
"I assume it was while you were out drinking and dancing." I drained the last of my water and walked back into the ring.
"Hey,"
Cassian said, catching my arm. His hazel eyes were more green than brown today.
"I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hit a nerve. Az only told me because I told him I needed to know for my own forces, to know what to expect. None of us, we don't think it's a joke. What you did was a hard call. A really damn hard call. It was just my shitty way of trying to see if you needed to talk about it. I'm sorry,"
he repeated, letting go. The stumbling words, the earnestness in his eyes. I nodded as I resumed my place. "All right." Though Rhysand kept at it with Azrael, I could have sworn his eyes were on me, had been on me from the moment Cassian had asked me that question. Cassian shoved his hands into the sparring pads and held them up. 30 1-2 punches, then 40, then 50. I winced at him over his gloves as I wrapped my hands. You didn't answer my question, he said with a tentative smile, one I doubted his soldiers or Illyrian brethren ever saw. It had been love, and I'd meant it. The happiness, the lust, the peace. I'd felt all of those things, once. I positioned my legs at 12 and 5 and lifted my hands up toward my face. But maybe those things had blinded me, too. Maybe they'd been a blanket over my eyes about the temper, the need for control, the need to protect that ran so deep he'd locked me up, like a prisoner. I'm fine, I said, stepping and jabbing with my left side, fluid, smooth like silk, as if my immortal body at last aligned. My fist slammed into Cassian's sparring pad, snatching back as fast as a snake's bite, as I struck with my right, shoulder and foot twisting. 1, Cassian counted. Again I struck. 1-2. 2. And fine is good. Fine is great. Again, again, again. We both knew fine was a lie. I had done everything. Everything for that love. I had ripped myself to shreds, I had killed innocence and debased myself, and he had sat beside Amarantha on that throne. And he couldn't do anything, hadn't risked it, hadn't risked being caught until there was one night left, and all he'd wanted to do wasn't free me, but fuck me, and again, again, again. 1-2, 1-2, 1-2. And when Amarantha had broken me, when she had snapped my bones and made my blood boil in its veins, he just knelt and begged her. He hadn't tried to kill her, hadn't crawled for me. Yes, he'd fought for me, but I'd fought harder for him. Again, 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 each pound of my fists on the sparring pads a question and an answer. And he had the nerve, once his powers were back, to shove me into a cage. The nerve to say I was no longer useful. I was to be cloistered for his peace of mind. He'd given me everything I needed to become myself, to feel safe, and when he got what he wanted, when he got his power back, his lands back, he stopped trying. He was still good, still Tamlin, but he was just wrong. And then I was sobbing through my clenched teeth, the tears washing away that infected wound, and I didn't care that Cassian was there, or Rhys, or Azriel. The clashing steel stopped. And then, my fists connected with bare skin, and I realized I'd punched through the sparring pads. No, burned through them, and I stopped too. The wrappings around my hands were now mere smudges of soot. Cassian's upraised palms remained before me, ready to take the blow if I needed to make it. I'm all right, he said quietly, gently. And maybe I was exhausted and broken, but I breathed. I killed them. I hadn't said the words aloud since it had happened. Cassian's lips tightened. I know. Not condemnation, not praise, but grim understanding. My hands slackened as another shuddering sob worked its way through me. It should have been me. And there it was. Standing there under the cloudless sky, the winter sun beating on my head, nothing around me save for rock, no shadows in which to hide, nothing to cling to, there it was. Then darkness swept in, soothing, gentle darkness. No, shade, and a sweat-slick male body halted before me. Gentle fingers lifted my chin until I looked up, at Rhysand's face. His wings had wrapped around us, cocooned us, the sunlight casting the membrane in gold and red. Beyond us, outside, in another world, maybe, the sounds of steel on steel, Cassian and Azriel sparring, began.
You will feel that way every day for the rest of your life, Rhysand said.
This close, I could smell the sweat on him, the sea and citrus scent beneath it. His eyes were soft. I tried to look away, but he held my chin firm.
And I know this, because I have felt that way every day since my mother and sister were slaughtered, and I had to bury them myself, and even retribution didn't fix it.
He wiped away the tears on one cheek, then another.
You can either let it wreck you, let it get you killed like it nearly did with the Weaver, or you can learn to live with it.
For a long moment, I just stared at the open, calm face. Maybe his true face, the one beneath all the masks he wore to keep his people safe. I'm sorry about your family, I rasped.
I'm sorry I didn't find a way to spare you from what happened under the mountain,
Rhys said with equal quiet.
From dying, from wanting to die.
I began to shake my head, but he said,
I have two kinds of nightmares. The ones where I'm again Amarantha's whore, or my friends are. And the ones where I hear your neck snap and see the light leave your eyes.
I had no answer to that, to the tenor in his rich, deep voice. So I examined the tattoos on his chest and arms, the glow of his tan skin, so golden now that he was no longer caged inside that mountain. I stopped my perusal when I got to the V of muscles that flowed beneath the waist of his leather pants. Instead, I flexed my hand in front of me, my skin warm from the heat that had burned through those pads.
Ah,
he said, wings sweeping back as he folded them gracefully behind him.
That.
I squinted at the flood of sunlight. Autumn court, right? He took my hand, examining it, the skin already bruised from sparring.
Right. A gift from its High Lord, Baron.
Lucian's father. Lucian. I wondered what he made of all this. If he missed me. If Ianthe continued to prey on him. Still sparring, Cassian and Azriel were trying their best not to look like they were eavesdropping.
I'm not well versed in the complexities of the other High Lord's elemental gifts, Rhys said, but we can figure it out, day by day, if need be.
If you're the most powerful High Lord in history, does that mean the drop I got from you holds more sway over the others? Why I'd been able to break into his head that one time.
Give it a try. He jerked his chin toward me. See if you can summon darkness. I won't ask you to try to winnow,
he added with a grin. I don't know how I did it to begin with.
Will it into being?
I gave him a flat stare. He shrugged.
Try thinking of me, how good-looking I am, how talented.
How arrogant?
That too.
He crossed his arms over his bare chest, the movement making the muscles in his stomach flicker. Put a shirt on while you're at it. I quipped. A feline smile.
Does it make you uncomfortable?
I'm surprised there aren't more mirrors in this house, since you seem to love looking at yourself so much. Azriel launched into a coughing fit. Cassian just turned away, a hand clamped over his mouth. Rhys's lips twitched.
There's the Feyre I adore.
I scowled, but closed my eyes and tried to look inward, toward any dark corner of myself I could find. There were too many. Far too many. And right now, they each contained that letter I'd written yesterday. A goodbye. For my own sanity, my own safety.
There are different kinds of darkness,
Rhys said. I kept my eyes shut.
There is the darkness that frightens, the darkness that soothes, the darkness that is restful.
I pictured each.
There is the darkness of lovers, and the darkness of assassins. It becomes what the bearer wishes it to be, needs it to be. It is not wholly bad or good.
I only saw the darkness of that dungeon cell, the darkness of the bone carver's lair. Cassian swore, but Azriel murmured a soft challenge that had their blades striking again.
Open your eyes.
I did, and found darkness all around me, not from me, but from Rhys. As if the sparring ring had been wiped away, as if the world had yet to begin. Quiet, soft, peaceful. Lights began twinkling, little stars, blooming irises of blue and purple and white. I reached out a hand toward one, and starlight danced on my fingertips. Far away, in another world, perhaps, Azriel and Cassian sparred in the dark, no doubt using it as a training exercise. I shifted the star between my fingers like a coin on the hand of a magician. Here in the soothing, sparkling dark, a steady breath filled my lungs. I couldn't remember the last time I'd done such a thing, breathed easily. Then the darkness splintered and vanished, swifter than smoke on a wind. I found myself blinking back the blinding sun, arms still out, Rhys still before me, still without a shirt. He said,
We can work on it later. For now, he sniffed, go take a bath.
I gave him a particularly vulgar gesture and asked Cassian to fly me home instead. Chapter 31.
Don't dance so much on your toes, Cassian said to me 4 days later, as we spent the unusually warm afternoon in the sparring ring. Feet planted, daggers up, eyes on mine. If you were on a battlefield, you would have been dead with that maneuver.
Amryn snorted, picking at her nails while she lounged in a chaise.
She heard you the first 10 times you said it, Cassian.
Keep talking, Amryn, and I'll drag you into the ring and see how much practice you've actually been doing.
Amryn just continued cleaning her nails, with a tiny bone, I realized.
Touch me, Cassian, and I'll remove your favorite part, small as it might be.
He let out a low chuckle. Standing between them in the sparring ring, atop the House of Wind, a dagger in each hand, sweat sliding down my body, I wondered if I should find a way to slip out. Perhaps winnow, though I hadn't been able to do it again since that morning in the mortal realm, despite my quiet efforts in the privacy of my own bedroom. 4 days of this, training with him, working with Reese afterward on trying to summon flame or darkness. Unsurprisingly, I made more progress with the former. Word had not yet arrived from the summer court, or from the spring court, regarding my letter. I hadn't decided if that was a good thing. Azriel continued his attempt to infiltrate the Human Queen's courts, his network of spies now seeking a foothold to get inside. That he hadn't managed to do so yet had made him quieter than usual, colder. Amryn's silver eyes flicked up from her nails.
Good, you can play with her.
Play with who? Said Moore, stepping from the stairwell shadows. Cassian's nostrils flared.
Where'd you go the other night?
He asked Moore without so much as a nod of greeting.
I didn't see you leave Rita's.
Their usual dance hall for drinking and revelry. They'd dragged me out 2 nights ago, and I'd spent most of the time sitting in their booth, nursing my wine, talking over the music with Azriel, who had arrived content to brood, but reluctantly joined me in observing Reese holding court at the bar. Females and males watched Reese and throughout the hall, and the Shadow Singer and I made a game of betting on who, exactly, would work up the nerve to invite the High Lord home. Unsurprisingly, Az won every round, but at least he was smiling by the end of the night, to Moore's delight when she'd stumbled back to our table to chug another drink before prancing onto the dance floor again. Reese didn't accept any offers that came his way, no matter how beautiful they were, no matter how they smiled and laughed, and his refusals were polite, firm, but polite. Had he been with anyone since Amarantha? Did he want another person in his bed after Amarantha? Even the wine hadn't given me the nerve to ask Azriel about it. Moore, it seemed, went to Rita's more than anyone else, practically lived there, actually. She shrugged at Cassian's demand, and another chaise like Amryn's appeared.
I just went out, she said, plopping down.
With whom? Cassian pushed.
Last I was aware, Moore said, leaning back in the chair. I didn't take orders from you, Cassian, or report to you. So where I was and who I was with is none of your damn concern.
You didn't tell Azriel either.
I paused, weighing those words, Cassian's stiff shoulders. Yes, there was some tension between him and Moore that resulted in that bickering, but perhaps... Perhaps Cassian accepted the role of buffer not to keep them apart, but to keep the Shadow Singer from hurt, from being old news, as I'd called him. Cassian finally remembered I'd been standing in front of him, noted the look of understanding on my face, and gave me a warning one in return. Fair enough. I shrugged and took a moment to set down the daggers and catch my breath. For a heartbeat, I wished Nesta were there, if only to see them go head to head. We hadn't heard from my sisters or the mortal queens. I wondered when we'd send another letter or try another route.
Why, exactly? Cassian said to Amryn and Moore, not even bothering to try to sound pleasant. Are you two ladies here?
Moore closed her eyes as she tipped back her head, sunning her golden face with the same irreverence that Cassian perhaps sought to shield Azriel from, and Moore herself perhaps tried to shield Asriel from as well.
Rhys is coming in a few minutes to give us some news, apparently.
Didn't Amryn tell you?
I forgot, Amryn said, still picking at her nails. I was having too much fun watching Feyre evade Cassian's tried-and-true techniques to get people to do what he wants.
Cassian's brows rose. You've been here for an hour.
Oops, Amryn said.
Cassian threw up his hands. Get off your ass and give me 20 lunges.
A vicious, unearthly snarl cut him off. But Rhys strolled out of the stairwell, and I couldn't decide if I should be relieved or disappointed that Cassian versus Amryn was put to a sudden stop. He was in his fine clothes, not fighting leathers, his wings nowhere in sight.
Rhys looked at them, at me, the daggers I'd left in the dirt, and then said, Sorry to interrupt while things were getting interesting.
Fortunately for Cassian's balls, Amryn said, nestling back in her chaise, you arrived at the right time.
Cassian snarled half-heartedly at her. Rhys laughed and said to none of us in particular, Ready to go on a summer holiday. Moore said,
The summer court invited you?
Of course they did. Feyre, Amryn, and I are going tomorrow.
Only the three of us.
Cassian seemed to have the same thought, his wings rustling as he crossed his arms and faced Rhys. The summer court is full of hot-headed fools and arrogant pricks, he warned. I should join you.
You'd fit right in, Amryn crooned. Too bad you still aren't going.
Cassian pointed a finger at her. Watch it, Amryn. She bared her teeth in a wicked smile.
Believe me, I'd prefer not to go either.
I clamped my lips shut, to keep from smiling or grimacing, I didn't know. Rhys rubbed his temples. Cassian, considering the fact that the last time you visited, it didn't end well.
I wrecked one building.
And, Rhys cut him off, considering the fact that they are utterly terrified of sweet Amryn, she is the wiser choice.
I didn't know if there was anyone alive who wasn't utterly terrified of her.
It could easily be a trap, Cassian pushed. Who's to say the delay in replying wasn't because they're contacting our enemies to ambush you?
That is also why Amryn is coming, Rhys said simply. Amryn was frowning, bored and annoyed. Rhys said too casually, There is also a great deal of treasure to be found in the summer court. If the book is hidden, Amryn, you might find other objects to your liking.
Shit,
Cassian said, throwing up his hands again. Really, Rhys? It's bad enough we're stealing from them, but robbing them blind?
Rhysand does have a point, Amryn said. Their High Lord is young and untested. I doubt he's had much time to catalog his inherited hoard since he was appointed under the mountain. I doubt he'll know anything is missing. Very well, Rhysand. I'm in.
No better than a firedrake guarding its trove, indeed. Moore gave me a secret, subtle look that conveyed the same thing, and I swallowed a chuckle. Cassian started to object again, but Rhys said quietly,
I will need you, not Amryn, in the human realm. The summer court has banned you for eternity, and though your presence would be a good distraction while Feyre does what she has to do, it could lead to more trouble than it's worth.
I stiffened. What I had to do, meaning track down that book of breathings and steal it. Feyre Cursebreaker and thief. Just cool your heels, Cassian, Amryn said, eyes a bit glazed, as she no doubt imagined the treasure she might steal from the summer court. We'll be fine without you swaggering and growling at everyone. Their High Lord owes Rhys a favor for saving his life under the mountain and keeping his secrets.
Cassian's wings twitched, but Moore chimed in. And the High Lord also probably wants to figure out where we stand in regard to any upcoming conflict. Cassian's wings settled again. He jerked his chin at me.
Feyre, though. It's one thing to have her here, even when everyone knows it. It's another to bring her to a different court and introduce her as a member of our own.
The message it had sent to Tamlin, if my letter wasn't enough.
But Rhys was done. He inclined his head to Amryn and strolled for the open archway. Cassian lurched a step, but Moore lifted a hand.
Leave it, she murmured.
Cassian glared, but obeyed. I took that as a chance to follow after Rhys, the warm darkness inside the House of Wind blinding me. My fey eyes adjusted swiftly, but for the first few steps down the narrow hallway, I trailed after Rhys on memory alone. Any more traps I should know about before we go tomorrow? I said to his back. Rhys looked over a shoulder, pausing atop the stair landing.
Here I was, thinking your notes the other night indicated you'd forgiven me.
I took in that half-grin, the chest I might have suggested I'd lick and had avoided looking at for the past 4 days, and halted a healthy distance away. One would think a High Lord would have more important things to do than pass notes back and forth at night.
I do have more important things to do,
he purred, but I find myself unable to resist the temptation, the same way you can't resist watching me whenever we're out. So territorial. My mouth went a bit dry, but flirting with him, fighting with him, it was easy, fun. Maybe I deserved both of those things. So I closed the distance between us, smoothly stepped past him, and said, You haven't been able to keep away from me since Callan May, it seems. Something rippled in his eyes that I couldn't place, but he flicked my nose, hard enough that I hissed and batted his hand away.
I can't wait to see what that sharp tongue of yours can do at the summer court,
he said, gaze fixed on my mouth, and vanished into shadow. Chapter 32. In the end, only Amryn and I joined Rhys, Cassian having failed to sway his High Lord, Asriel still off overseeing his network of spies and investigating the human realm, and Mor tasked with guarding Valaris. Rhys would winnow us directly into Adriata, the castle city of the summer court, and there we would stay for however long it took me to detect and then steal the first half of the book. As Rhys's newest pet, I would be granted tours of the city and the High Lord's personal residence. If we were lucky, none of them would realize that Rhys's lapdog was actually a bloodhound, and it was a very, very good disguise. Rhys and Amryn stood in the townhouse foyer the next day, the rich morning sunlight streaming through the windows and pooling on the ornate carpet. Amryn wore her usual shades of gray, her loose pants cut to just beneath her navel, the billowing top cropped to show the barest slice of skin along her midriff, alluring as a calm sea under a cloudy sky. Rhys was in head-to-toe black, accented with silver thread, no wings, the cool, cultured male I'd first met, his favorite mask. For my own, I'd selected a flowing lilac dress, its skirts floating on a phantom wind beneath the silver and pearl-crusted belt at my waist. Matching night-blooming silver flowers had been embroidered to climb from the hem to brush my thighs, and a few more twined down the folds at my shoulders, the perfect gown to combat the warmth of the summer court. It swished and sighed as I descended the last two stairs into the foyer. Rhys surveyed me with a long, unreadable sweep from my silver-slippered feet to my half-up hair. Nuala had curled the strands that had been left down, soft, supple curls that brought out the gold in my hair. Rhys simply said,
Good. Let's go.
My mouth popped open, but Amryn explained with a broad, feline smile, He's pissy this morning. Why? I asked, watching Amryn take Rhys's hand, her delicate fingers dwarfed by his. He held out the other to me.
Because,
Rhys answered for her, I stayed out late with Cassian and Asriel, and they took me for all I was worth in cards. Sore loser. I gripped his hand, his calluses scraped against my own, the only reminder of the trained warrior beneath the clothes and veneer.
I am when my brothers tag-team me, he grumbled.
He offered no warning before we vanished on a midnight wind, and then I was squinting at the glaring sun off a turquoise sea, just as I was trying to reorder my body around the dry, suffocating heat, even with the cooling breeze off the water. I blinked a few times, and that was as much reaction as I let myself show as I yanked my hand from Rhys's grip. We seemed to be standing on a landing platform at the base of a tan stone palace, the building itself perched atop a mountain island in the heart of a half-moon bay. The city spread around and below us, toward that sparkling sea, the buildings all from that stone, or glimmering white material that might have been coral or pearl. Gulls flapped over the many turrets and spires, no clouds above them, nothing on the breeze with them but salty air and the clatter of the city below. Various bridges connected the bustling island to the larger landmass that circled it on three sides, one of them currently raising itself, so a many-masted ship could cruise through. Indeed, there were more ships than I could count, some merchant vessels, some fishing ones, and some, it seemed, ferrying people from the island city to the mainland, whose sloping shores were crammed full of more buildings, more people. More people like the half-dozen before us, framed by a pair of sea-glass doors that opened into the palace itself. On our little balcony, there was no option to escape, no path out but winnowing away, or going through those doors, or, I supposed, the plunge awaiting us to the red roofs of the fine houses 100 feet below. "Welcome to Adriata," said the tall male in the center of the group. And I knew him, remembered him. Not from memory. I'd already remembered that the handsome High Lord of Summer had rich brown skin, white hair, and eyes of crushing turquoise blue. I'd already remembered he'd been forced to watch as his courtier's mind was invaded, and then his life snuffed out by Rhysand. As Rhysand lied to Amarantha about what he'd learned, and spared the male from a fate perhaps worse than death. No, I now remembered the High Lord of Summer in a way I couldn't quite explain, like some fragment of me knew it had come from him, from here, like some piece of me said, "I remember, I remember, I remember, we are one in the same, you and I." Rhys merely drawled, "Good to see you again, Tarquin." The five other people behind the High Lord of Summer swapped frowns of varying severity. Like their lord, their skin was dark, their hair in shades of white or silver, as if they had lived under the bright sun their entire lives. Their eyes, however, were of every color, and they now shifted between me and Amryn. Rhys slid one hand into a pocket and gestured with the other to Amryn. "Amryn, I think you know, though you haven't met her since your promotion." Cool, calculating grace edged with steel. Tarquin gave Amryn the briefest of nods. "Welcome back to the city, lady." Amryn didn't nod, or bow, or so much as curtsy. She looked over Tarquin, tall and muscled, his clothes of sea green and blue and gold, and said, "At least you are far more handsome than your cousin. He was an eyesore." A female behind Tarquin outright glared. Amryn's red lips stretched wide. "Condolences, of course," she added with as much sincerity as a snake. Wicked. Cruel. That's what Amryn and Rhys were, what I was to be to these people. Rhys gestured to me. "I don't believe you two were ever formally introduced under the mountain. Tarquin, Feyre. Feyre, Tarquin." No titles here, either to unnerve them or because Rhys found them a waste of breath. Tarquin's eyes, such stunning crystal blue, fixed on me. "I remember you, I remember you, I remember you." The High Lord did not smile. I kept my face neutral, vaguely bored. His gaze drifted to my chest, the bare skin revealed by the sweeping V of my gown, as if he could see where that spark of life, his power, had gone. Rhys followed that gaze. "Her breasts are rather spectacular, aren't they? Delicious as ripe apples." I fought the urge to scowl, and instead slid my attention to him, as indolently as he'd looked at me, at the others. Here I was, thinking you had a fascination with my mouth. Delighted surprise lit Rhys's eyes, there and gone in a heartbeat. We both looked back to our hosts, still stone-faced and stiff-backed. Tarquin seemed to weigh the air between my companions and me, then said carefully, "You have a tale to tell, it seems."
"We have many tales to tell," Rhys said, jerking his chin toward the glass doors behind him. "So why not get comfortable?"
The female a half step behind Tarquin inched closer.
"We have refreshments prepared."
Tarquin seemed to remember her and put a hand on her slim shoulder.
"Cressida, Princess of Adriata."
The ruler of his capital, or wife. There was no ring on either of their fingers, and I didn't recognize her from under the mountain. Her long silver hair blew across her pretty face in the briny breeze, and I didn't mistake the light in her brown eyes for anything but razor-sharp cunning.
A pleasure, she murmured huskily to me, and an honor.
My breakfast turned to lead in my gut, but I didn't let her see what the groveling did to me, let her realize it was ammunition. Instead, I gave her my best imitation of Rhysand's shrug. The honor's mine, princess. The others were hastily introduced, three advisors who oversaw the city, the court, and the trade, and then a broad-shouldered, handsome male named Varian, Cressida's younger brother, captain of Tarquin's guard and prince of Adriata. His attention was fixed wholly on Amryn, as if he knew where the biggest threat lay, and would be happy to kill her if given the chance. In the brief time I'd known her, Amryn had never looked more delighted. We were led into a palace crafted of shell-flecked walkways and walls, countless windows looking out to the bay and mainland, or the open sea beyond. Sea-glass chandeliers swayed on the warm breeze, over gurgling streams and fountains of fresh water. High Fae, servants and courtiers, hurried across and around them, most brown-skinned and clad in loose, light clothing, all far too preoccupied with their own matters to take note or interest in our presence. No lesser fairies crossed our path, not one. I kept a step behind Rhysand as he walked at Tarquin's side, that mighty power of his leashed and dimmed, the others flowing behind us. Amryn remained within reach, and I wondered if she was also to be my bodyguard. Tarquin and Rhys had been talking lightly, both already sounding bored of the approaching Ninsar, of the native flowers that both courts would display for the minor, brief holiday. Callan May wouldn't be too long after that. My stomach twisted. If Tamlin was intent on upholding tradition, if I was no longer with him, I didn't let myself get that far down the road. It wouldn't be fair, to me, to him. We have four main cities in my territory, Tarquin said to me, looking over his muscled shoulder. We spend the last month of winter and the first spring months in Adriata. It's finest at this time of year. Indeed, I supposed that with endless summer, there was no limit to how one might enjoy one's time. In the country, by the sea, in a city under the stars. I nodded. It's very beautiful. Tarquin stared at me long enough that Rhys said,
The repairs have been going well, I take it.
That hauled Tarquin's attention back. Mostly. There remains much to be done. The back half of the castle is a wreck. But, as you can see, we've finished most of the inside. We focused on the city first, and those repairs are ongoing.
Amarantha had sacked the city, Rhys said.
I hope no valuables were lost during its occupation.
Not the most important things. Thank the mother, Tarquin said. Behind me, Cressida tensed. The three advisors peeled off to attend to other duties, murmuring farewell, with wary looks in Tarquin's direction, as if this might very well be the first time he'd needed to play host, and they were watching their High Lord's every move. He gave them a smile that didn't reach his eyes, and said nothing more as he led us into a vaulted room of white oak and green glass, overlooking the mouth of the bay and the sea that stretched on forever. I had never seen water so vibrant, green and cobalt and midnight. And for a heartbeat, a palette of paint flashed in my mind, along with the blue and yellow and white and black I might need to